The Other Side podcast mission is to discuss important cultural and social issues relating to race, culture, gender, and equality.
Welcome. In partnership with the Columbus Dispatch editorial board, The Other Side is featuring a special series of podcast episodes called In Black and White. Dr. Terrence Dean and I will be interviewing scholars and community leaders in relevant fields to try to answer some of the most important questions related to racism. And joining us today is Columbus Councilwoman Shayla Favor. Thank you for joining us today, Councilwoman.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, you're very excited. I'm looking forward to this conversation. Thank you so much for joining us. You've been pretty busy. I've seen a lot of you on the news lately, particularly around schools and zoning, neighborhoods and zoning. And now you have this new initiative for housing for those who may be displaced. Could you talk about that? Because I saw the announcement on Twitter. So for those who may not be on Twitter, could you share more about what that new initiative for those who may be facing eviction, housing displacement, and what they need to do and how they can get in touch with that organization?
Absolutely. Over the course of the last year and a half, so since the onset of the pandemic, the city has put over $33 million out into the community to help with eviction assistance. So that includes actually paying your rent, but also includes legal assistance as well as mediation services. What we announced last week is the new Stable Housing Initiative as a way to really penetrate those vulnerable markets that don't often get the type of attention that they deserve. We know that this pandemic has not hit all communities equally, and that it has disproportionately affected communities of colors. And so, you know, with that in mind, we are ensuring that there are dollars out into the community that are supporting smaller organizations, some of the larger organizations that we have worked with. And I'm going to take a moment just to give a shout out to all of our housing providers who have just been phenomenal, helping so many of our Columbus and Franklin County residents, Impact, Columbus Urban League, just to name a few. But this is really about targeting specific communities. So new Americans, LGBTQIA plus residents, thinking about residents who are seniors or disabled. You may not be familiar with Impact. You may not be familiar with the Columbus Urban League, but you might know St. Stephen's Community House and would feel comfortable going and working with the representative there. So $12.2 million to those organizations and hoping to get another round of that out very soon.
So when you say that they're offering rental assistance, is there a certain cap on how much rental assistance one can apply for?
Yeah, so there have been various different funding sources that have come from the federal government. What residents need to understand is each of those different pots have come with different sets of rules. They don't need to worry about that too much. What we are figuring out is how we can use those pots of money, depending upon the rules, to serve whoever is in front of us at that moment. So we might not be able to use the first round of CARES Act dollars to serve somebody that's already received assistance, but they might be eligible for some Treasury dollars, or they might be eligible for ARP dollars. So if you are facing eviction, or if you are close to that eviction, don't wait until you actually get that summons in the mail. Reach out to any of those 26 plus organizations that are committed to doing this work alongside the city of Columbus. And let me also reiterate that this money is for landlords as well. You know, I know that, you know, the community might feel that the landlords, you know, they don't need to recoup their money right now. We're facing a pandemic, but we're thinking about our mom and pop landlords as well. And they use that rental income as a way of sustaining their livelihood. And they have taken a hit, just like some of us too. So landlords can also apply on behalf of their tenants.
I think that's really great to make note of, is that so many people who may be African-American or other minorities who may be housing landlords and be offering, you know, to help those in the community. But, you know, mm-hmm. So it works reciprocal, as you mentioned. So really great work. Thank you. Yeah. So how do they get in touch with Impact? Is there a number? Is there a website? And do they do all the information? Do they fill everything out online? Mm-hmm. How long is the process? Like, would it happen immediately? Like, since tomorrow.
Right. So if your listeners are on social media, I have all of the organizations listed on my pages. I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok as well. And as we are speaking, my team is putting up another graphic that is going to provide additional information for folks. So if you Google City of Columbus Stable Housing Initiative, you'll find the list of the 26 organizations. If you go to any of my social media pages, I've got a flyer that lists all of the organizations on there. And just stay in touch. Let me know. I have been going back and forth with folks on Facebook and Twitter who've had questions, who provided us feedback. We welcome all of that, right? We're not going to be able to capture all of the organizations that first go around, but we want to know how else we can continue to be most helpful to residents right now.
Why is this word passionate for you? Because that's been your initiative housing. For those who may not know, you were a zoning attorney.
Yes. My career started off at the Columbus City Attorney's Office in the Environmental Division. And the work that we were primarily doing was abating nuisance properties. And what that means is cleaning up neighborhoods. Think about the way in which some of our communities are plagued with some bodegas, which are not, and my husband's from New York, so we use that kind of frequently, right? Bodegas that, aren't giving the community what it needs as far as food sources, right? But I can't tell you how many I had to investigate that were selling drugs or running prostitution or gas stations that are selling single cigarettes to kids or alcohol to kids, or even folks who are using their homes to engage in criminal activity. We were able to investigate those types of cases, bring them into court, and essentially demand that they do something or they stop doing something. And that can change someone's experience overnight. If you've got drug activity going, across your pathway every single day, you're worried about your kids going back and forth to school, that getting that type of criminal activity out of our community is key to eliminating blight and making all of our community safe and accessible to all of our residents, no matter your skin color. So it's passionate for me, because what we all often find is that people that look like me are in communities that don't see a lot of investment, right? That don't see the type of revitalization that you might see in more affluent areas. Now, we could talk about gentrification in another podcast, but at the same time, I feel that everyone deserves safe and affordable housing. I think that everybody should have opportunity to jobs and to quality education, but that doesn't happen if we don't clean up our neighborhoods. So housing is incredibly important to me. And I also know the history of housing and African Americans in this country and how our communities were created. It's not by accident that we have what is known as ghettos or urban corridors or suburbs, right? These are things that are all done by design. And it's time that we start to truly shed some light. And if we want to really talk about equity, this is how it starts. So I'm passionate about it because I want to see. And let me take a step back. All of these things play into each other, right? We're talking about systemic racism. You can't talk about education without also talking about housing, right? How is a student going to make sure that he's receiving that quality education if he has nowhere to go and lay his head down at night and to do his homework? Well, let's also talk about jobs, right? How is that person going to get that job if they haven't received the education or the skills training that they need, and then they don't have the housing that they need? And so if they don't get the job that they need, they can't pay for the housing that they need. This is how systemic racism works. It's really about dismantling the systems. And I think that housing is one kink in the chain that we can start to work at.
I love how you just gave us a brief analysis of critical race theory in that.
Oh gosh, not CRT. That's the dirty word right now.
I really broke it down in layman's terms, like how all these things impact one another, and they're systemic in the way they react and how they impact people of color.
Yeah.
But, let's talk about affordable housing, because that's very key and a key component. Columbus is growing. I've seen a lot of construction happening in a lot of communities, particularly, around the downtown and that area. How is that going to impact housing for those who may be interested in reinvesting in community? Because I've seen the skyrocketing of rent, the skyrocketing of, home ownership now. Those homes that were once affordable seem to be now out of reach for a lot of African Americans. So is there something or some type of plan you envision to help people to reinvest in that regard who want to reinvest in their own community?
Yeah, so there's a couple of initiatives that are happening at the city. I think it's to set the landscape, you've got a city that is growing. It's the fastest growing community city in the state of Ohio. It's the 14th largest city in the country with a little over 900,000 residents and expected to grow by a million in just a few years, million more additional residents in a few years. Our housing market has been booming for quite some time now. While I was at the city attorney's office, I was frequently contacted by developers and investors from overseas buying properties en masse, sight unseen. So Columbus has been hot. And that's for a lot of reasons. You know, we've got a lot of Fortune 500 companies. We've got these large universities. There's so many things that attract companies and folks to the city of Columbus.
Yeah.
But then you also put that in light of the pandemic. And the pandemic has slowed down a lot in our society, including development and construction. Now, it does appear as though we are building a lot everywhere. And pre-pandemic, we were building around 8,000-ish units a year when we needed to be building 14,000 units to keep at pace with our growth. So we, even though it seems like we're building a lot, we weren't building enough to keep up. And so then you introduce the pandemic, and then lumber goes up, construction costs go up, and so we're slowing down even more. Coupled with the fact that folks have lost their jobs, right? So you just see these things compounding upon themselves. So, you know, there's a few things happening at the local level. You have the incentive policy. The incentive policy is a way for developers to get up to be a part of this affordable housing initiative. So if you're going to build in certain areas of the community and you want to receive a tax incentive, a tax abatement, then you have to set aside a certain amount of the units in your project that will be deemed affordable. Okay, so there's that piece. There's also the piece with we have a land bank in the city of Columbus in Franklin County. And there is a owner-occupied program so that if you want to live in the community that you are purchasing this property, you don't want to just develop and go, flip and go, then and you're committed to living 5 years, 50% off that property. Now, I say that with the acknowledgement that most properties that end up in the land bank, they're in bad shape, right? They have come to us by way of tax foreclosure or a donation, something along those lines, but they need work. But once again, it's incentivizing not only just ownership, but actually being a committed member of that specific community that you're in. So, and then we also have an update to our zoning code that's taken place. Our zoning code has not been updated in probably the last 20 plus years. And people might be asking, well, why does that matter? Well, zoning can be an obstacle that many affordable housing developers have to overcome. So if you're required to have so many parking spaces, if you're required to have tapping fees, that means tapping in to get the water, the sewer activated. If you've got all of these things that can be a barrier to you getting your process started, time is money, right? So how can we work around those things? So that policy is currently, that code is currently being revised right now. But short of having that silver bullet, it's going to be a combination of progressive measures that are really targeted towards and driving home equity to ensure that folks that have never had opportunities to participate in home ownership, they have those opportunities. So, and there's protections to make sure that the homes that we do have remain affordable as long as they can.
Scott, I know you're waiting anxiously to jump in here.
Councilwoman, I wanted to ask you about the housing moratorium, which President Biden his administration just elected to not pursue extending that moratorium, which was in place primarily during the pandemic. So many people who were financially affected couldn't pay their rent. So now that the moratorium, for the most part, is going to be ending, I wanted to get your thoughts on that. Do you think it should be extended? And if it is, what would you say to the landlords who, in many cases, may be small mom and pop operations? And so they financially cannot bear the burden of not having rents come in. You know, they may not want to put their tenants out on the street, but they just financially can't continue to go on not receiving rent. So I just want to know what's your response to that.
Yeah, you know, I understand everyone's frustration with the limitations on the moratorium. You know, I think for the better part of the pandemic, we were blamed for not canceling rent, and we don't have that authority to do that at the local level. Right. If the president of the United States can't get that done, we definitely can't do it as a member of council. But what we can do is continue to put dollars out in our community to ensure that folks are not going to have to face evictions. And that includes ensuring that landlords have dollars that they need in order to keep themselves afloat as well. There have been many mortgage companies that have worked with landlords during this process to extend that grace. But when we think about our mom and pop landlords, that's why the Stable Housing Initiative and that $12.2 million that we announced last week was so critical for us to really start raising awareness to the measures that have been put in place by President Biden's administration, that these dollars aren't just for residents, for tenants, that they are also for landlords so that they can keep themselves afloat. The problem is that states and local jurisdictions have not gotten the dollars out as quickly as they need to. And so what you'll start to see now is really this elevated conversation and the need to get the dollars out the door. There's no doubt that one of the most frustrating things about me being an elected official is the bureaucratic mess that comes along with everything. I want to get the dollar to the people that the person that needs it the most right now. I don't want to have to worry about all of the administrative pieces and all of that. These people are suffering right now, and I want to get the aid to them. I have been humbled in many ways and understand that that's also part of the process here. And so as much as that I can do to streamline that process, and part of this is just education. Many landlords don't even know that they can have access to that dollar. And even if they do, they're worried that working with the government could have some blowback for them. And right. So what does it look like for us to really get in front of the messaging and demonstrate to our landlords and our tenants that the city is truly here to help them navigate this process. This is unprecedented. We have never seen anything like this in our country's history. And I don't know if we're ever going to see this amount of money ever get infused into states and local jurisdictions ever again. And so my advocacy is not just for eviction assistance right now and making sure that landlords stay afloat, but how do we change the trajectory of folks so that people get access to home ownership, so that we get folks out of shelter and that they're in stable housing? We're talking about housing overall, and it's more than just evictions.
So just to follow up on what mm-hmm. you just said. So there is money still there, and people can still, there is still money that people can apply for. The problem is that people are just not aware. You're saying the problem is that the money is just not going out because people are not aware that it's actually there and available for their use.
I think part of it is education. I think that I can't own every problem for the city, but I own that we need to do a better job of getting out there and telling our story, telling the fact that we have put out over $33 million over the course of the pandemic. We just announced another 12.2 last week. So yes, there is money out there available for landlords and tenants.
Thank you.
And I think it's absolutely right. It's very critical that we get information into community and mm-hmm. how. And I think what you're saying, the platforms you're using, you know, social media is one. Radio has to be another component. Newspaper, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times our seniors and elders and those persons may not have access to computer or social media. How yes. they get information, and then like you said, education.
Yes.
Bureaucracy of it, you know.
Yes, that's the frustrating piece for me. That's the frustrating piece for me. But, you know, last week, the mayor and I announced that new 12.2 that was going out into the community. And so I feel like that got a lot of press, but we can't just rest on that. We got to just keep, you know, banging that thing out there and making it loud as much as we can. So conversations like this absolutely help, because there's people that are listening to you guys that might not never touch my social media, might not never watch 10 TV news and see that this information is out there. And there's so much other misinformation that's happening in our news. That folks might be shying away from traditional news outlets. And so that's something that we have to take into account. How do we penetrate other communities that aren't, you know, don't receive information the way in which we do?
And I want to remind our listeners that we are talking to Councilwoman Shayla Favor, you know, for those of y'all who don't know, she's active in community. I want to make sure, do you have anything, an event that's coming up that people can attend or any other way that people can get in contact with you? And what's next for Shayla Favor?
Yeah. Yeah. So right now, I am working on the community outreach piece that is going to that is working in collaboration with some housing legislation that I passed, that council passed back in March. So in light of our housing and eviction crisis in Columbus, I rolled out the Housing for All legislative package. In that package, we passed protections to ensure that tenants could not be discriminated based upon how they receive their source of income, right? So if you receive your income from Section 8, or if you receive alimony or you receive child support, it does not matter and it should not matter. As long as you're able to pay your rent, that should not be a means of discrimination. Source of income discrimination is a proxy for race discrimination. And that is one of the reasons why that was so important for us to ensure was a part of this first rollout of our housing measures. The second one, we call it renter's choice. And what that does is provide an opportunity for folks who are having to move quickly during this pandemic time, whether they face an eviction or something else. When you move, one of the most burdensome pieces is those upfront moving costs. So think about the security deposit, right? You got $1,000 in a security deposit. You got to pay first and last month's rent. So what would it look like if you had a choice here? If you could pay it like you normally would, the $1,000 upfront, or split that payment up over 3 months, or split it up over 6 months. So now that option is available for residents to use right now, like it's already law. And then the third piece is, we're just calling it rental receipt. If you pay your rent with cash or money order, the landlord is required to give you a receipt. Now, it seems like, yeah, you would get a receipt, but you weren't. And what we find is if you are low income, most of the times you're also unbanked. And so you're relying on your word against their word if you have to face an eviction, a trial for an eviction. And oftentimes it doesn't fare well for the tenant. So those protections are in place right now. We are working with a team that's going to be out in the community over the next 2 to 3 months, really educating residents and tenants on what these protections means. These are really fair housing matters. And I want to make sure that if I cannot build more housing today, like physically right now, then I'm doing everything that I can to protect residents so that they are not, you know, taken advantage of, that they can fight for themselves if they ever should find themselves in that position.
Awesome. And what's next?
What's next? I have no idea. I'm already thinking about Housing for All Part 2. Round 2. So already thinking of, you know, what are some more progressive measures that we can take in Columbus to really make a dent? Once again, I'm not a developer and I don't own a construction company. So I can do all of the policy making that I can. But how can we make sure that we are preserving what's already here so that it can be affordable indefinitely? And, you know, those are large, complex problems that they're not easy to solve, but I'm excited to be a part of the conversation and advocating on the side of change and preservation.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Councilwoman. We really appreciate you joining us today.
Yeah, we do.
Oh. Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Absolutely.
Please come back.
Yeah, we have
time. There's so many. I mean, I chair housing, but I also chair criminal justice and judiciary. So that's the courts and everything dealing with, you know, a lot of the stuff that we're also talking about in the Black and Brown communities. And then I also chair public service and transportation, which is also key, right? Like when we're talking about, you know, access to opportunities and jobs, well, you got to have transportation to get there. So how are we ensuring that we're doing that?
Okay. Well, thank you. So we know you have to run because you're very busy making change for our city, you know, and our communities. And we just thank you so much for everything you do. So we appreciate you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you both. Have a great day.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
And for everybody else out there, don't forget to check out our other episodes. You can find them on dispatch.com or wherever else you find your podcast. So until the next time, try to see things from the other side. Thanks.